Welcome, Tale Tellers, and I hope that I can make whatever potentially boring thing you're doing a lot more enjoyable. Let me help pass the time with a horror story. In fact, a horror epic. Now, part one is slower than the rest, but it's designed to be that way. You'll see as we explore more parts of the story. So stick with it, it's going to be fantastic. The title of this story is What Really Happened to Andersonburg by the Jesse Clark. This author has been very patient and I really do appreciate it, but it is a massive story. Speaking of my appreciation, let's go through some quick shoutouts. Troy Shaw, thank you for pinpointing that weird skip in the last episode. I'll go back and visit that to make sure it's 100% fixed, but thank you for the likes, comments, and feedback. DJ Gambit, Jessica Terrell, Y-Hi Batted, Short Bus the Great, Quasarbolt, 4 Minutes of Wave, and as always, the Crazy Town Podcast. These guys are fantastic. If you want anything weird and wacky, check them out. Now, turn the lights off, the sound up, and get very comfortable, because now it's time for something different. What really happened to Andersonburg, Pennsylvania, in April of 1829, by the Jesse Clark. Perhaps you've heard of Andersonburg, the old western Pennsylvanian town that, like Roanoke before it, suffered a mysterious end and left no account of survivors to enlighten anyone as to the details of its fate. Luckily, that may no longer be the case. I've joined a university-funded expedition here, and have been tasked with collecting items of value that can hopefully assist in our search for knowledge pertaining to the curious fate of the city. After some exhausting work, I did indeed come across a diary that is by far the most informative document yet unearthed. I'll check the source for veracity at a later date. For now, here are its contents for anyone interested. 3rd of April, 1829. Another man caught the fever. This time, down at the lumber camp. From what I hear, the poor bastard was tying down the logs when he just up and fell right over into the river. Almost drowned, I heard. And when the others got to him, Matthew Thomas and the lot, they said his face had gone pale as a cloud and that he was shaking and sweating and coughing. Ain't no mistaking that for nothing, but the early signs of the fever. So they hauled the poor fellow out and gave him a canteen and had him rest. But then without telling him, they struck up camp and left him there. I'm not sure what came of him, but everyone here knows the mayor's rule. None struck with fever are permitted to return to Andersonburg. If they're favored enough to survive the thing, unlikely as that sounds, they're to remain banished to the woods with nothing but the clothes on their backs and whatever coin they got's in their purse. Not a one of the other lads down at the camp wanted to risk becoming an infected and meeting such a grisly fate. No, sir. April 4, 1829. By mayor's decree, the lumber camp is to be abandoned, along with all the supplies it's gathered, for fear of being tainted with fever. There was an uproar at the mansion today over the decision. Many men are out of work now because of it, but strange enough, I didn't see not a one of the fellows from the camp itself down at the mansion. Just their wives and some others. And I know why too. They wouldn't admit it aloud, no sir. But they don't want to go back. I wouldn't either. I've seen the fever at work at Pinefield, and it ain't got no place in my home. Not while I've got a wife at home. No, sir. 7th of April, 1829. Maria says to me today in the kitchen, Paul, I can't believe the mayor throws so many good men out of jobs. But I says back to her, Dunno, sweetheart. Perhaps he's got himself a point. That old camp's been run clean over with the fever, and you don't want that plague finding its way around here. No, sir. God himself couldn't stop it if it did. So she snorts and walks away. But she'll come around eventually, especially when the stories of the infected keep coming. If fever's hit the camp, then it's only a good 2 or 3 miles from the town. Only a matter of time, I think, before it finds its way here. God above, I hope I'm wrong. But maybe I should start thinking about taking Maria away for a time, though. to see my brother in Philadelphia, just till all the foul things conclude here. 11th April, 1829. A man got shot last night, not 100 yards from Jim Isley's porch. Jim says he was delirious, just stumbling about the tree line without an aim in the world. He calls out to him and says, "Declare yourself. You's an Iroquois? I'll shoot you dead if you're an Iroquois, old boy." And he said nothing. So shoot him he did. Then Jim sent his boy Nathan into town to fetch a picket while he watched the field, thinking an Indian attack was brewing. But when Nathan got back with some of the men and their rifles looking for a good fight, not another Indian had shown his face. So they went out and looked at the body and saw it was something worse. That old infected fellow from the lumber camp found his way back to town in his stupor. Ugh, and by God, says the men, the fever worked its way through him right quick. Says he's rotten inside out, skin fallen off like a leper, teeth all filed into those wicked points. So they put up their shirts to their noses and mouths, and they set the body to the flame. They told the story today at the pub, but some of the other gents there took offence to the tale. Says they should have told the mayor. Says they shouldn't have gone near the corpses. One fellow, Tom Huggins, I think he was, said those men were probably infected too, by virtue of going near even a dead infected. Says the plague lingers after death. Then he bolts out the door, and the barkeep asks the storyteller to leave. I left too. Ain't no risk in getting the fever. No, sir. 15th April, 1829. Jim Isley didn't show up at the office today, and all the men there knows the story with the infected fellow getting shot too. So the rumours are swirling. No one's heard from him. His clients are stopping on by, and all we can say is, we ain't seen the fellow. Come on by later on. So they do. But they ain't happy about it. No, sir. I like old Jim, even if he's a little small-brained. So I say to myself, I think I'll stop by his house after closing, to see what's the matter. I know I shouldn't, but if he's sick, I'll know for sure, and I won't go near the man. I just hope it ain't the fever. God above, I hope it ain't the fever. So I gets to his house at around about dusk, and his wife Sarah opens up the door. She's a sweetheart, she is. But even though she's putting on a nice big smile for her guests, I can tell she's got a worry on her mind. So I put my hat to my chest and I says, "Greetings, ma'am. Just stopping on by to extend my regards to Jim. He didn't show up at the office today, you see, and I was hoping I could see him." Then her smile fades and she says, "That's mighty kind of you, Paul. But Jim's been under the weather, and he won't let neither me nor Nathan into the bedroom. All I know is he's sweating and having trouble keeping down a meal." Then my smile fades, and I sage without a second thought, "Sarah, I'm guessing you heard about the guest a half a week back, the man Jim shot?" And she says, "The Iroquois scout? Jim says he shot him dead." So I says, "Sarah, that weren't no Iroquois scout. That was the infected fella from the lumber camp. Jim and some other fellas burned the body once they saw the skin." And her face goes white as a ghost, and she just says, "Don't you lie to me. Don't you lie to me about my Jim." And she goes and shuts the door on my face. I hope she gets her wits about her and gets Nathan out there soon. He's a good lad, and she's got a big kindly heart herself. They don't deserve this. As luck would have it, though, I ran across Dr. Armistead on the way home, and I tells him about Jim. Maybe he can help. 16th April, 1829. Maria wakes me up early today, and she says, "The Isleys are gone. The Isleys are gone." And I'm tired, so at first I don't know what nonsense she's talking. But then I remember Jim, and Sarah, and Nathan, and I says, "What do you mean, gone? Dead. Gone?" And she says, "No. The doctor says Jim's got the fever, Paul." And so a few men grab their muskets, and they haul the whole Isley family out their house and toss them right out the whole town. Some of the men says, if they ever come back, they'll shoot them dead. so I feels right guilty for ratting them out. And I throws my covers off, and I run outside and down the street. Sure enough, the Isley's home's gone up in smoke. The whole town's out there watching it burn without a pity, except the parish. And when I runs up, I hears people talking about anyone else who'd be in contact with that body of the fellow down at the lumberyard. Then I hears the other names come up. David Brody, John Green, Will Benson Hodges. The townsfolk say they've got to find him and give him the boot, or else the whole town will get the fever. One lass says, "Why don't we just shoot him?" And another fella says back to her, "Then we'd have to remove the corpses. Wouldn't want to go near such a thing, would you? The plague lingers. Better to have them walk right on out on their own 2 feet." But I thinks to myself, hell, that's almost worse. 18th April, 1829. The town's all done over in a hysteria, I tell ya. The mayor's declared martial law ever since the Isleys, and the Brodies and the Greens and the Hodges got evicted, and not a soul is to enter Andersonsburg until further notice. You can leave, and it won't stop you, but you ain't coming back if you do, and the townsfolk will assume your departure means you've been struck with the plague. Then they'll burn your home to ash. I've seen it happen 10 times in the last few days alone. These boys ain't playing games, no sir. There are some of them religious folks talking about how it's God's judgment for sin, and other fellows with muskets patrolling the streets, and every once in a while you'll hear a big old loud crack as he pops off his gun. Cause that's the other thing, you see. Them infected keep trying to get back in.
Oh-ho-ho. Okay, so if you haven't gathered this so far, let me do a recap. The story is about a weird fever infecting the town, and we're reading from a journal left in 1829. I've linked the story in the notes, so be sure to check it out if you're interested, or wait till I read out the next episode, which should be tomorrow. I gotta ask you all, what would you have done? You know what I would have done? Left. I would have grabbed my wife and just bolted out of that place. I can sense death trap a mile away. I have to feel for the people there, though. But they do seem to know of the fever, which is doubly creepy, like it's happened all before. And they seem to know its effects on people. What more of a reason to get the hell out of there? Tell me what you think. What was going through your mind when you were listening to this? I just have flashbacks around all the films I've seen involving infected creatures. This does not bode well for the town of Andersonsburg. Before I finish this episode, I want to ask a favour, and that is, if you enjoyed the episode, help share it around. I love narrating, but love sharing stories even more. Nothing better than finding that story that you love, and showing it to others that share that passion. So, if you get a chance, like and spread this story around as much as possible, because I'll need your help to do it. And you are all so important. And on that note, Telltellers, this is a place where stories live, and you Telltellers come to listen. Enjoy your day or night and join me every weekday for our creepy tradition. And as always, till next time.